Just going to take a quick break from the show, everybody, to tell you a little bit more about one of my favorite things in the world, Audible. Audible lets you enjoy all of your audio entertainment in one app. You'll always find the best of what you love, or there's new stuff to discover all the time in Audible. Incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre, from bestsellers to new releases to celebrity memoirs, mysteries, and thrillers, motivation, wellness, business. They got it all here in Audible, and you can have it all too. Audible is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment, including Small Town Murder, Crime and Sports, and Your Stupid Opinions, with highly anticipated new releases and next listen recommendations to habituate every type of thriller listener. And you can keep your heart rate up month after month with this pulse-pounding collection you can't hear anywhere else. The true crime stuff they have is amazing. Right now, what I'm listening to is The Family by Ed Sanders, and it is a full, complete retrospective on the Manson family, kind of all of what they were doing to set their weird stuff up. It is amazing and incredibly detailed. Great stuff, and there's so much more on there. And as an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from the entire catalog, including bestsellers, new releases, latest stuff. You got it. It's all there. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/smalltownmurder or text smalltownmurder to 500-500. That's audible.com/smalltownmurder or text smalltownmurder to 500-500.
Now back to the show.
This episode is brought to you by Philo.
Oh, philo.tv.
That's right. There's nothing better than unwinding, watching a little TV. But it's a real hassle if with, you know, cable trying to flick through. Cut the cord. Get rid of that. You don't need any of that. Philo has all that you could need here. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month.
What?
Can't beat it. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, they have an unlimited DVR for 1 year, so you can save all your favorite shows.
Wow.
Watch them when you want to watch them. Yeah. That's fantastic. Never miss a minute of shows like Death by Fame, Married to Evil, or The Prison Confessions of Gypsy Rose Blanchard.
Oh.
Good stuff. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like ID, A&E, and Law and Crime, and many more. With Philo, you can start watching in seconds for less money and much less hassle. Really easy to use, really easy to sign up. Try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/smalltownmurder. That's philo.tv/smalltownmurder to get 50% off your first month.
Now back to the show.
And welcome to Small Town Murder Express.
Yay and choo-choo.
Ha, yay indeed, Jimmy. Yay indeed. My name is James Petragallo. I'm here with my co-host.
I'm Jimmy Wissman.
That's right. Thank you for joining us all aboard the murder train. We are pulling away from the station. Crazy episode this week, as usual. It never stops. It's always chugging along here. Very quickly before we start, shutupandgivememurder.com is where you can go for all of your merchandise. And, of course, tickets to live shows.
Hell yeah.
Get your tickets right now. Get your tickets to Milwaukee at the Pabst September the 10th. Come there, please. It's going to be our biggest show ever. We're going to have so much fun. And then the next month we are in Florida. We're 2 shows in 1 night at the Tampa Improv. Next night we're in Orlando for 2 shows. Get your tickets for those. Come and see us. ShutUpAndGiveMeMurder.com and Patreon.com/CrimeAndSports is where you want to get all of your bonus small town murder stuff.
Absolutely.
Bonus everything. Anybody $5 or above, you get access to all the bonus stuff. And it's a lot, too. You're going to get like 4 new episodes a month.
Yeah.
Crime and Sports and Small Town Murder. This week, what you're going to get for Crime and Sports, we're going to talk about the scandals of Michael Jordan. The scandals of the most bulletproof media guy ever in history. First of all, they're the gambling and the conspiracy theories around that and his dad's murder and all that kind of stuff. And then, of course, his affairs, multiple paternity suits. We're talking like yearly paternity suits that would come up. Just, hey, it's paternity season. There we go, Mike.
Awesome.
And then one of the biggest divorces in the history of the world. It's the settlement is outstanding. And then for Small Town Murder, we're going to do our favorite. Oh, it's been like a year and people have been asking us for it, so we got to do it again. Reviews of things in small towns.
Terrific.
Small town reviews, businesses in small towns. Let's hear somebody complain about a Red Lobster in the middle of Missouri somewhere. What do you say, everybody?
Yeah,
it's going to be fun. Oh, we're going to have so much fun with that. That is patreon.com/crimeandsports, and you're also going to get a shout out at the end of the main show there.
Sure.
So that said, let's go on a trip after we have
all
to
right.
wait, let's sit back, Jimmy.
Oh yeah,
we do have to clear the lungs, everybody. Wherever you are, where are you, in your car, in your house?
Yeah.
Maybe not somewhere too public, you never know.
I don't want anybody
in prison or anything.
Yeah.
It's time to sit back and shout, shut up
and give me murder.
Let's do this, Jimmy.
Okay.
Let's go on a trip here. Oh,
here
boy.
We
are going to Rhode Island. Oh, buddy. Here we go. Rhode Island, coming from where we, North Dakota last week.
Yeah.
Very different from Rhode Island, I would say. This is Barrington, Rhode Island. This is far, far eastern Rhode Island. It's its own little panhandle, this whole area.
Is Great Barrington? What is that?
Great Barrington is where we went to buy weed in Massachusetts.
Oh, okay.
That's right.
I was like, why does that sound familiar?
Are you skipping a word? Which was a tremendous to watch Jimmy purchase my weed also, because I was like, okay, I can get this much, then you get this much. And he had no idea what he was buying, and it was awesome.
Yeah.
And the guy was really giving him a rundown, and he's like, oh, yeah, really? Wow, great. That sounds amazing.
And then asking me, which which way are you going to use this?
Like,
and I'm like, I don't fucking know.
Jimmy said a lot of yes and a lot of nodding. Yeah.
Oh, man, that sounds fun.
He could have asked you anything. He could have been like, going to put it in your dickhead and just light it up. Yep, that's what I'm going to do.
That's generally
right in my urethra.
Yeah.
Yep, just stick it in there.
I'm going to roll it in the foreskin.
You know how it goes. This is in far eastern Rhode Island, like I said. Its own little panhandle. Population, 16,015 people. So it's still a small little place. Median income here, $103,937
for the people of Rhode Island.
The household.
Great.
It's so tiny. I feel like it's scarce. There's not a lot of Rhode Island. So if you're going to buy some of it, it's going to be expensive.
So expensive.
It's not a lot of it to go around.
Supply and demand, babe.
Median home price here is $524,000. That's the median home price.
Shit.
A little bit of history here. There was a rubber company here for a long time, the Newith Rubber Company, until it burned down in the 40s and nobody rebuilt it.
Smelled wonderful.
So you've heard the expression like a tire fire. Well, this town probably stunk of tire fire until at least, you know, the Kennedy assassination. So not great. The 1938 New England hurricane caused huge damage to the homes along the shoreline, fucked up everybody's boats, destroyed railroad service for a while. It was a mess. Barrington was the only dry town in Rhode Island until 2011. The only town in Rhode Island that didn't sell booze was
2011?
2011. Think about it. I mean, the towns are tiny. You can go three blocks over and buy booze. But still, in your town, a dry town, in Rhode Island, in the Northeast, people are drunk here. I'm from the Northeast. People drink a lot. It's not, you know, they're drinking all the time. So this is crazy.
And you've got beaches and shit. What goes better with a beach than getting fucked up?
The town finally approved two liquor stores in 2011. So it's still, like, controlled, though. You still can't just open up a bar or something. Reviews of this town. Here we go. 5 stars. Barrington is quiet, friendly, clean, and family-oriented town. It hosts countless neighborhoods. Well, yeah, it has neighborhoods, Jimmy, the town.
What?
No shit, really? It's not just, you know, spread out across the prairie. You're in the Northeast and you have neighborhoods.
Just sparse land dotted with houses?
That's all it is, yeah. And it's one of the best school systems in Rhode Island, with plenty of nature, woods, ponds, golf course, soccer fields. Golf courses aren't nature. That's man-made nature. You knock down nature and planted sod. That's a different thing. It's not a nature.
We destroyed nature in some places.
Jesus. East Bay bike path and a town beach. You can't go wrong. Most people in town are like-minded, go-getters who want the best for their families. The community is one of the most involved that I have seen. Ugh. Parent-teacher organizations are a strength, and the resources that are provided to the children are seemingly limitless. because we're all rich, so we just keep giving money, which may be why the school system is so good. Yeah, more money equals better. Yeah, it's going to work. It's
generally how it works.
There's a solid foundation and support of support in town from every direction. As far as entertainment goes, there are shops, two fine wine and spirit stores, the two approved by the council, and plenty of restaurants to eat at that you can't buy booze, apparently. The town library is lovely, and right behind it is a town playground. The town is a family town and is to be adored by all who join the community. Okay. 4 stars. Barrington is a lovely town with a great education. Very simple. 3 stars. Getting worse. The community is not for me. I personally never fit in, but I can definitely see for most people it's a great place to be.
I want to see that guy.
You know what? I like this person. They recognized. We say all the time, the reviews that we read, they're not about the place that they're reviewing. It's about the reviewer. That's what it is. That's who you really find out about. And that person was like, you know what? I can see if I was a different person, I should be able to do it. But I'm just not up to it. So good for you, sir. 2 stars. For all but 3 months of the year, it's cold. If you don't like the cold, this is not the place for you. Okay.
It's New England. God damn
it. That's what it is.
Cold.
I mean, on the water, too. Yeah. 1 star. Worse, it says. Patronizing. People lack of personality. Don't touch their laws or they will chase you. Literally. Well, that's generally how it works. If you break the laws, people chase you. Don't touch their laws or they will chase you literally. Wealthy kids are just so uneducated. Educated academically, uneducated in principles. The community is getting worse. Also, try to commute to work anywhere. A nightmare. And any storm, power is lost for days.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, you can move somewhere that's not on a little, like, fucking tiny... A little peninsula on the edge of a fucking giant bay in an ocean. Maybe it would probably be different. You know, I don't know. Things to do. The Jack-o'-lantern Spectacular.
Oh.
Yeah. It's
they
just
love fall. Man. Fall is such a big deal to New England.
We were talking about that. But
the fall fests are insane.
This is just a lot of jack-o'-lanterns that are meticulously carved and, you know, really fancy pumpkins.
Really gotten to be fucking annoying.
It is. I can see 2 of them, and I'm like, cool. And then I don't want to see any more pumpkins. I've seen enough. That's enough pumpkins for me.
I get it. You can shave it with a laser now and make it really fucking impressive. But you didn't do that with your hands, so go fuck yourself.
Do that with the kit that's $3.99 in the supermarket, where you get that little tiny saw blade. That little tiny saw blade that bends when you do it. If you can do it with that in front of my eyes, I will fucking worship you. Put it that way. Do it with store-bought equipment.
Or the knives my mom used to make me use, kitchen knife.
Butcher knife. Yeah, that's it. You get what the average child gets, which is one of those kits at $3.99 and the kitchen butcher knife. Those are your tools. Make that fucking pumpkin, and I'll be impressed. Until then,
shove the pumpkin up your ass. Into a 3D Michael Myers mask like you did with all that other shit you used, and we'll discuss that.
Let's see you throw down with that jack-o'-lantern, boy. All right. So, that said, let's talk about a murder. What do you
say?
Let's do it. This is, what a crazy case this is, or murderers, I should say. Let's talk about a man first here. Let's talk about Christopher Jamire, J-E-M-I-R-E, Hightower. Now, the name Hightower, if you are our age, it's Police Academy. Immediately, it's a 7-foot-tall black guy. That's just who it is. That's Hightower.
For the Houston Oilers.
That's all it is right there.
Yeah.
This is a short, bald, white guy. So you got to – I had to say that off the top just because immediately I pictured Jimmy picturing this 7-foot-tall black guy walking around. It's not him. It's a completely different guy.
A tiny woman with a very high voice.
Yeah. Completely different guy here. He is described by his friends. He's 42 years old, and we'll get into all this in 1991 when our whole thing goes down here. He is described as his friends as, quote, a devoted father of 2 who taught Sunday school and coached soccer.
Oh.
So he's just a upstanding
little man,
upstanding pillar of the community. He's a commodities advisor as well.
What the fuck that means.
It's trading like commodities, like trading places. Remember?
Yeah.
Frozen orange juice.
Right.
That's Yeah. Thank shit for that movie. It's really explained a lot about the economy to people like us, you know, morons. It's, yeah. Oh, that's me, how that works.
Told me, don't get involved in trading, otherwise you will end up in a cage with a wild monkey.
That wants to have sex with you on New Year's Eve. Yeah. That's what happens to you. If that's okay. It's true, though. But with that, it made me not ever want to mess with the stock market or be in financial stuff. Watching that movie as a kid, I was like, I don't understand anything of what's going on in this. I'm glad Eddie Murphy wins at the end. I don't know what's happening. Like, this is crazy. So
Dan Aykroyd going through the worst shit on earth.
Oh, that's the best. I still don't know if I understand the scheme to this day, and I see the movie every year. But if I had to explain it to an economist, they'd probably call me a moron, put it that way. So Hightower here, he's from Florida, all right? So, you know, don't hold that against him, but he's from Florida. He graduated from the University of Rhode Island as a zoology major.
Oh.
How many people go from zoology to commodities trading? That's an odd...
It's a weird transition.
It's a very strange transition.
Strange pivot.
He worked in the management, and then before he was a commodities trader, after he graduated with a zoology degree, he managed restaurants.
What?
So, yeah, he's all over the place. He's got life experience, we'll say that. Yeah. He's done a lot. In 1973, he married Arlene Krebs, who was a nurse at the Newport Naval Hospital, and where he was in the Navy. We'll talk about that. They ended up having two daughters, you know, family life, whatever. So he came from... Titusville, Florida. That's where he grew up. He's the oldest of five children. Jeez. And he was in the Navy. She was a Navy nurse when they got together. So, gotcha. I mean, it was that sort of deal. Her name was Susan Slicker. Oh, I'm sorry. No, that's his second wife. That was his first wife. Then he married Susan Slicker is her name. Okay. And double S over here. And she's 12 years younger than him. And that was right after they got divorced. He got divorced from his first wife in 1981. So he gets pretty much remarried right away. To a little bit younger woman. They moved to Dayton, Ohio,
Jesus,
where he went back to school, attending Wright State University. Susan was pursuing a master's degree in education, and Hightower was getting a master's in physiology, and he was enrolling in a doctoral program in biomedical sciences.
Jesus Christ, this guy does everything.
Holy balls. He does all the shit I don't understand he does. I don't know what any of that even means.
Except for managing the Chili's, I can understand that.
That. I get what that is. I understand you have to schedule two bartenders on a Friday night. I get that part, but I don't know what is going on otherwise. But they ended up leaving Dayton. This is very odd. I don't know if we've had this a lot before. Their house had two fires in 1 week. Two fires in a week. So they just left Dayton. They just left school and left Dayton. Now that seems like someone's after them or something, right? Yeah. You know, your house doesn't catch on fire by accident twice in a week.
Well, if it does, you certainly get the fuck out of there.
Yeah, you go, this house is uninhabitable, but do you leave school and move from the state? You just find a different house to live in, I would think, at that point. You wouldn't leave the whole state and drop out of school. And if you were setting it on, let's say you were trying to burn your own house down, you wouldn't, if you tried once and it didn't work and the fire department put it out, you wouldn't go, let's burn it again on Thursday night after you just tried on Monday, would you?
You got to assume the department didn't put it out, right?
It was still smoldering for days.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Re-caught?
I would think someone in the doctoral program in biomedical sciences would probably know that better than that. Anyway, he's not a complete moron. So he ended up failing his doctoral preliminary exams.
Shit.
Which had to be postponed three different times because of the fires. Mm-hmm. And at that point, he was dabbling in the commodities market, fucking around, seeing what he could do. He's just a smart guy trying to do some stuff.
AMC to the moon.
I can't do it. So. He said, one of his friends said, it was my impression that he decided to change his career because he was doing better in the stock market.
Okay.
He's failing tests to be in the doctoral program and making money in the stock market. So he's like, why am I bothering with this shit? Right. I can just make money here.
This was in the 80s?
This was, in the early 80s.
That's when you had to,
82, 83.
Track it in the fucking newspaper.
There was tickers. back then. Yeah. Yeah, that was like, that was
so weird.
Different time. You couldn't check it on your phone. It would go at the end of the day, and then you would wait till the next morning to see what the paper said it closed at.
Which is the bizarre part, because you can't watch what it does through the day.
No.
You're just seeing the finished product.
That's why you had stockbrokers back then, because they would be monitoring it over the day. All the stock firms, they had tickers, so they would monitor and buy and sell as appropriate. That's why they were, whereas now, if you can see it yourself, it's the guy, stock market, now he's just an advisor going, hey, I heard about this. This one, I heard about that one, but yeah, I don't think it would really be that great. Not that I know shit about it, because I don't own a stock in anything. So his wife and his two sons here, they ended up moving to Barrington, and he ended up going along as well with his new wife and all that. So his friends describe him as, quote, gracious and compassionate. They said he was a caring man who coached the soccer and t-ball teams and was especially popular with his Sunday school classes. Everybody loves him. He gets some good clients, too, like when they go to Rhode Island and he's doing the commodities thing. And he's kind of like taking on clients now. Like he's just kind of doing like a freelance commodities advisor is what he is. So he ends up making good friends with a guy. Him and his wife make friends with a couple named Ernest and Alice Brendel, B-R-E-N-D-E-L. And Ernest decides to invest with Christopher and let Christopher play with his money a little bit. You know what I mean? Fuck around with it. So small little commodities accounts. You know, you can give him, here's $1 million, but here's, you know, 20 grand and you fuck around with it, whatever. Yeah. And we'll talk about the Brendels. They have a little bit of money. They're doing well. Ernest is a lawyer specializing in trademark and international licensing matters.
Holy shit.
Again, would you know where to start to do that?
God.
No, I have no idea.
How do you even check if something exists?
That just sounds like you make a lot of money. And I know it is because we had to trademark our Shut Up and Give Me Murder and all of our stuff. Right. And it was not cheap to do that. It cost
and
a lot of money.
It took so long.
Oh, it took like a year and a half, and it cost so much money, like more than my car. It was like, what's happening? So
why am I doing this?
Yeah, what are we doing? But you have to do that shit for business, I guess. That was what we were told anyway. See, we know nothing. We don't even know what we're supposed to do. We have to have people tell us, and we're like, I guess we'll do that.
We have people saying, well, don't do that until you're protected, because otherwise somebody can sue you, and we didn't want that. So
we're like, oh, no. Okay.
Well, we can sue others.
That sounds bad. We don't want to get sued. So now Brendel himself he's pretty good at investing, actually. He'd done pretty well putting his money here and there in the stock market, and he didn't know too much about the commodities market, so that's why he was like, I'd like to dabble in it. My friend seems to be an expert in it. Let's let him do it.
Show me the ropes, babe.
There you go. Now, Ernest and Alice is 46, Ernest is 52 years old. She worked as a librarian at the time. They met in the 1970s through the Brown University Alumni Club in New York City. So they're both, they're so Ivy foreign. Leaguers.
It's so foreign.
It's none of these. I know what everyone's thinking right now. People are listening and they're looking at their phone going, like tapping it, going, is this small? None of these people belong in Small Town Murder at all. Yeah. None of them.
People are
Where's
successful.
The drifter?
Yeah. These are all people that die of old age surrounded by their family.
Where's some 55-year-old man with like a scruffy beard and a 14-year-old girl in tow that knocks on their door or something? Where's that guy is what everyone's saying. Where's that guy? Okay, so Alice Brendel, they met. She worked at Brown University, by the way, during this time as a librarian. They were in Providence for a while, but they lived in New York City before that. They lived in Manhattan. They didn't do anything crazy, but they were into like intellectual pursuits. One of Alice's friends said they were intellectually oriented, but kind of self-effacing. They didn't go out of their way to be anything but what they were. They said what they felt. They explored ideas, but it was all genuine. We just enjoyed each other and we enjoyed being together, which doesn't sound like much, but in this day and age, it's a hell of a lot.
Yeah.
That's one of their pretentious friends from Manhattan there.
That's a phrase that comes out of a pretentious person's mouth, and you see them eating cheese and drinking wine.
Yeah.
Whereas somebody that's typically on this show that says we enjoyed each other. That is a fuck fest in a trailer.
Yeah, we enjoyed each other means that a sister and a brother had sex for their entire childhood. That's what that means. We enjoyed each other, so what? We it's shared the bucket. That's right. So we shared the poop bucket. What's wrong with that?
Enjoyed each other.
We enjoyed each other. So they, both the Brendels, they liked history, politics, literature, travel, music.
They're, Jesus.
Yeah, one of their friends said, all of the intellectual pursuits, that's it. They they married in her hometown of Reading, Pennsylvania. Then they settled in Manhattan, where Alice worked at the New York Public Library, and Ernest got a job specializing in patents and trademarks with a large law firm. So
it's a lot of people with sweaters on a boat. Oh, this is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, these are people that go to Martha's Vineyard for the weekend and shit like that. Yeah. They go to the Hamptons. These are Hamptons people. Oh, they're going to the
sweater
Hamptons.
On a boat is a very specific person.
Yeah.
That's not somebody enjoying the water or like being, you know, being crazy. That's somebody enjoying the day.
They spend weekends in the Hamptons at their friends' beach houses.
Yeah.
That's the type of people we're talking about here. So just, you know, but they seem like nice people anyway.
Sure.
At one point, Ernest was assistant general counsel at Joseph E. Seagram's in New York when he finally decided to leave and move to Providence. They lived in Providence through the 80s. And then in about 88, they decided to move to Barrington, quieter life. They bought this farmhouse. You know, it's nice. They said they moved for the schools. You know, it's nicer, easier for schools. And Ernest set up his law office in the basement of their home. They have like a colonial white farmhouse, kind of your typical nice New England home. And, you know, it's two blocks away from the school that Emily went to. They have a daughter. They have a daughter named Emily by 1991. She's 8 years old. And, you know, she goes to a nice school around there. And it was just
beautiful.
Good shit. Yeah, it was just everybody was really happy. They said it was all just all very well-ordered, nice farmhouse. They'd have barbecues out back and just living an ideal kind of life, just an idyllic kind of life. So he's into business with Hightower, and things kind of go awry there. He loses some money in the trading, and it happens. Yeah, it does. It does. I guess Brendel here originally opened a trading account with him in March 1989, and he closed it 6 months later. After at a small loss, he was just like, well, it's not going well. So he closed the account. Okay. And they said Brendel ended up writing, quote, I concluded that despite his claimed ability to trade his own account, Hightower seemed to be unable to trade client accounts. Mm-hmm. That's what Brendel wrote at that point. He also said, kept in touch with Mr. Hightower since we both lived in the same small community, and I supported his efforts to become a successful trader. He also loaned Hightower $2,000 to buy computer equipment to help his business. This is after he closed his account with him and lost money. So this seemed to not affect his friendship with their friendship at all. Right. Like, that was it. Like, oh, that's fine. But yeah, he helps him start his business and they're still good friends and everything like that. As a matter of fact, the daycare center that Emily went to, the House of Little People, which sounds like some sort of a tent at the circus in 1935. Come one, come all, everybody, step right up, the House of Little People. How little can they be? You'll be shocked to see how little they are. Come on in. Two bits of gander. Like, there's just babies in there with mustaches drawn on. He's 44 years old. Look at him. It's just a four-year-old with like a mustache and some like coal miner coveralls on. I we straight from the mines. So at the House of Little People, they listed Susan and Christopher Hightower as the persons to contact in case of an emergency.
Oh, for all their own baby.
All the way up through 91. Yeah, they're the emergency contact. Their family doesn't live in town, so the Hightowers are the closest people. I mean, the people they would trust most with their daughter. So it said the Hightowers could have made life or death decisions about Emily. And, you know, they had next of kin rights at the school. So May 1990 comes around. And Hightower has this, he's found some little niche in the market with a particular group of investments that he's making. And he persuades Ernest to reopen his account. shows him trading records for something called the Spaziano account, and it showed $65,567 profit on a $75,000 investment in 4 months.
That's amazing.
Which, yeah, that's like 90% profit in 4 months. I don't think that's... If you see that,
doesn't happen.
Be very suspicious, or you know, either that or you hit some kind of weird golden, you know, whatever. But apparently, Brendel ended up closing that account a couple months later after he put in an initial $15,000, and it was dwindled down to about $3,100.
Ooh.
So, in a letter to Hightower, he asked him for repayment of the $2,000 loan and half of his investment money. He said, I get, you know, half, I guess, is my fault, but the other half, what are you doing here?
Come on, man.
And he even said, this is what Brendel wrote. This is what Ernest said. Quote, Chris, I am truly sorry that matters did not develop as we had hoped. I wish you all I wish you all future success. Yeah. That's what he wrote to him at the end of the letter. So, like, he wasn't like, you motherfucker, give me back.
No hard feelings.
So,
yeah.
None of this ever happens on this show. This is all reasonable people doing reasonable things. He didn't, like, you know, drink 3 quarts of Thunderbird and go over and stab him in the throat with a screwdriver. That's what would normally happen, but not today.
Which I probably would certainly understand.
That's understandable.
I get it, sir.
So Brendel started investigating, basically. He just started doing a little investigating of his own on the Spaziano account that had so much profit that he saw. And then a few weeks later, he writes a little less friendly letter to Hightower, and he accuses Hightower of falsifying that trading record and demanding his money back. Now he's pissed. He says, quote, this is, by the way, a man of his nature and upbringing and, you know, his whatever in society, his standing.
Right.
He says, quote, I find this information extremely distressing and impossible to comprehend. I am unable to discuss this with you since you have apparently disconnected your telephone lines.
Heard you running.
He also threatened to take the case to the authorities for possible criminal prosecution. You know he said to the authorities, too.
Yes,
he did. He didn't say, oh, turn your punk ass in. He said,
I'm going to call the cops.
I will contact the authorities, is what he said. He said for possible criminal prosecution, and he even filed a complaint with the CFTC, which could ultimately result in the loss of Hightower's trading license. So,
oh, shit.
The deadline for answering the complaint was September 17th, 1990, or 1991, and Hightower never answered
it. Never replied.
So,
oh, boy.
This is that week, his life completely fell apart, essentially, Hightower here. His computers, because of all of this, are repossessed.
Yep.
They take the money he owes on them. He
financed them.
He financed them. So they repossess his computers. He is barred by a court order from contact with his wife and sons. We'll find out why. In the order, Susan Hightower said that Chris told her that he had paid $5,000 to have her killed. He said, well, I paid $5,000 to have you killed and $1,000 more to make sure it looks like an accident, he told her.
I paid the bonus.
Yeah, I put a little extra stank on it there. Here's $5,000. Here's an extra grand to get away with it. What do you say? Like, to try to get away with it. Here's a grand not to leave fingerprints, please. One of his friends said his life was in a tailspin. So, no shit. She told him at that point she wanted a divorce, Susan tells Chris. And Hightower, that's when he said that, I paid $5,000 and $1,000 extra and all that shit.
And I put down the down payment for gloves. Suck it.
Suck that. Well, what do you think of that? This is why, by the way, they're living with her parents, this is going on. So,
oh, my God.
Yeah, computers repossessed. She wants a divorce. It's a mess with her parents there.
He's in her parents'
house. Her parents' house.
Oh, shit.
Not great. So, hey, everybody. Just going to take a quick break from the show to tell you a little bit about the safest sponsor that's ever been, Simply Safe.
Oh, simplysafe.com. SimpliSafe.com.
Springtime's coming here. So you got the spring, you got fresh air, fresh starts, and you clean your house. That's all fresh. It's also the perfect time to give a fresh look at Simply Safe Home Security. Make sure your newly cleaned, nice house is secure. That's important.
Well protected, yeah.
It's the only security system that Jimmy and I will use, and we recommend it highly. Sure. We both have it on not only our studios, our houses, anything we have that needs protection. SimpliSafe is the way to go. It's so easy to install that even we can do it. You guys will love it because you'll feel secure. You will not be small town murdered in your own home, is what it is, if you have SimpliSafe, because they're going to protect you. They're trusted by experts. It was named the best home security systems for 2024 by U.S. News and World Report, and Newsweek awarded SimpliSafe the best customer service in home security. SimpliSafe has given us and our many listeners real peace of mind, and I want you to have it too. We want you to feel good. Get 20% off any new SimpliSafe system when you sign up for Fast Protect monitoring. Just visit simplisafe.com/small. That's SimpliSafe, SimpliSafe.com/small. There's no safe like SimpliSafe.
Now back to the show.
Looking to instantly upgrade your Mother's Day gift from typical to meaningful? Shop Etsy. Get up to 30% off well-crafted and personalized gifts from participating shops until May 12th. This year, embrace your creative side. You know, the side your mom gave you. And shop Etsy for custom jewelry, style pieces, home decor, and extra special items she'll adore. Need something original and affordable for Mother's Day? Etsy has it. Shop until May 12th for up to 30% off gifts for mom. Terms apply.
This motivates Susan to seek a restraining order against him. And also, at that point, he's ejected from the parents' home as well. Yeah. So now he's really fucked.
It's all over, man.
He was surprised. The father-in-law, Susan's father, said that Chris seemed awfully surprised when he was served with court papers keeping him away from the house on the morning of September 21st, 1991. And the father-in-law says, he looked at me with his very cold stare that seemed to go right through me, and he asked me if I knew this restraining order was going to be served. He said he never had a chance to reply to Chris because there was a cop there who stepped in and told Hightower that he's got to get his shit and leave.
Yeah.
Let's go, asshole. So I guess Hightower called later that night to say he would be at his son's soccer game on Saturday. And the father-in-law said that I don't think you're allowed to do that, actually, because Susan's going to be there and you can't be within a whatever time, place of her. So September 20th, 1991, this is the same day all this is going on, the 20th, okay? The principal at the Primrose Hill School, this is where Emily goes to school a couple blocks away, Elizabeth Dufree is her name. Emily's in the third grade. Now, the principal said that a man called that day and said that Emily should walk home from school. Said, tell Emily to walk home from school today. She can't be picked up. So the principal said that school officials couldn't confirm over the phone who the parents were. There's no, like, code word or something. So, you know, to know what basically what the hell is going on here. So nobody came to pick her up. Rather than sending her home and saying, okay, I guess she can walk home, they sent her to the Barrington YMCA, where she used to go all the time for an after-school program. Whenever they can't pick her up, then she goes to this after-school program at the YMCA, which is right by. So they go, well, we'll just put her, I guess she's going to the Y thing today, and then you know, parents can figure it out, I guess. If she's not home, she's there, I guess. I mean, like, where's my 8-year-old? I don't know. One of a couple places.
Yeah. Casual-ass approach to children's safety back then.
It's real. This is 91, too. You would think it'd be a little better than that. So Jane Paluzzo, who is one of Emily's third-grade teachers, she said that a man came to school looking for her later that day. And Jane Paluzzo told him that he couldn't pick her up there. She wasn't there, and so he left. And his word, the way she said, quote, he said words to the effect of, I can go to the Y or can I pick her up at the Y? So he's going to go to the Y and get her. So this man shows up at the YMCA asking for Emily, and members of the staff said, well, you're not an authorized pickup person, so we can't just send an 8-year-old home with you. That's fucking crazy. So he left, okay, this guy. Then a man claiming to be Ernest Brendel called the YMCA like 10 minutes later and said that I'm sending a guy over, Christopher Hightower. He has permission to pick up my daughter.
Oh, okay.
So please do that. So Hightower then comes back. He was there 10 minutes ago. And he shows the staff Ernest Brendel's driver's license and says, look, the dad even gave me his driver's license to say, look, he wouldn't give a driver's license to a stranger. Obviously, I'm authorized, you know what I mean? He called and then gave me his driver's license. And so they went, well, yeah, that seems reasonable. Here you
what?
Go. Here's a, here, why don't you take this 8-year-old with you? Go ahead.
A man, he's tied up right now with some work stuff, but he gave me his driver's license.
Yeah.
Not what?
Told me it was fine.
Fuck.
So they said, okay, sure. Pam Poirier, who is the director of the program, said Emily was reluctant to leave early because it wasn't even pickup time. It was like early too. She also said that this Pam lady said that Emily didn't react when Hightower greeted her. Oh. And she said, quote, she just looked at him. Well, why the fuck did you let her go with him then?
He's got a driver's license.
Wow. So, he picks her up. And after that, nobody hears from Emily after that.
Yeah.
The
and
little girl
watched her leave and went, well, I'm probably fired.
Well, that's probably good. I hope that's all on the up and up, or I'm really going to be in a lot of trouble. So the Brendels are last heard from themselves. The Brendels are, we don't know where they are. Where are the Brendels? Because the school, I'm sure, tried to call the Brendels. No one's answering. They're last heard from when Alice Brendel called her friend Paige and said her husband couldn't meet him at a college football game that day because his mother had been hospitalized. Okay. Now, that wasn't true. We'll talk about that. And the friend said there was absolutely nothing untoward in her voice. If something horrific had happened at that point, she couldn't have disguised it. So they're like, she was fine at that point. So they're saying on that day, she didn't know what was going on. That same day, though, that she called her friend calmly, Alice does, and Hightower picks up the little girl. Hightower uses one of Brendel's credit cards at the local mall as well that day.
Oh.
So by the evening, he's got a driver's license and some credit cards and the little girl.
Yeah, and a kid.
The following night, he showed up at Brendel's house, at the Brendel house, he showed up driving their car. Okay. He shows up at the home of Ernest Brendel's sister, Christine, driving Ernest and Alice's
her brother's car,
red Toyota. Okay.
Uh-huh.
He came in the house. Her name is, what is her name? Scriabini. Okay. Christine Scriabini. She had some people over. She's having a dinner party. So, Hightower tells Alexander, her husband, that he's a friend of Ernest Brendel, your wife's brother there, your brother-in-law. And, he said, well, you have people over, Hightower says. I'll be back in a little while. I got something to tell you. So all the guests leave. Hightower comes back. He sits them down, and he says, listen, got to tell you guys something. Ernest, Alice, and Emily have been kidnapped.
Yeah.
They've been kidnapped, most likely by members of the mafia. So.
Yeah, so don't say a word.
As most, that's what happens usually is when you're in with the mafia, they really like to go after 8-year-old girls. That's really part of the whole, whole thing.
Yeah. And they usually tell somebody that has nothing to do with it because it's a neutral party. We got to keep a mediator.
Well, you need to have a go-between. So you get someone who's not in the mafia,
Nothing to do with this. Need you to break this to the family so that they will shut up and not tell anybody.
Yeah. Because that's what, That's how, and I'm not saying there aren't serial killers in the mafia that would be happy to kill 8-year-olds. The problem is, societally for them, it really doesn't work.
If you're
the 8-year-old killer, no one will hang out with you anymore. Nope. And you can't be in anybody's stick-up gang, and you're more truck hijackings. It really puts a damper on all of your activities as a mobster. So the most is being kidnapped by the mafia. So there's that. He said, my own wife and two sons also kidnapped. So, they have. At this point, they have a whole pen of them. There's six of them over there. Yeah. Both of our families are kidnapped. We're all in this together, is what he's saying.
Looks like a county animal shelter. It's
just
not good.
One cage for little cages for each of them too.
Lots
it's difficult.
Of chain link.
So the mafia has kidnapped six members of our combined families here. To corroborate his story, he pulls out the driver's license, Ernest's driver's license, because the mob would go take his driver's license and go talk to his sister. All right.
They're not going to believe you. They're going to want proof.
Some of his business cards, a bank card of Ernest Brendel's, and certain papers relating to Ernest. So basically, it looks like somebody robbed Ernest Brendel and then gave it to him.
Somebody
also
handed him his wallet and said, here's all the proof you need.
That's it. And then also showed them some rings that he claimed belonged to Alice Brendel. So he's like, I have her rings, too. This is what they handed me. And they said, you know, if you want the rest of them back, it's going to be. And he said he received a call from the kidnappers. That's why he's coming over to tell you, because they demanded $300,000 in ransom.
They need 300 grand. I have wallet and jewelry.
Yeah, 50 grand a pop for all the people they have, basically. Mm-hmm. And he said, Hightower said, I can get 175,000 myself, okay? I can do that. And then Ernest has $50,000 in his brokerage account. So I can take that, okay? But you guys are going to have to provide the rest of it. It's going to be like an extra 75 grand. I'll get the 225. I'll cover that. No problem. Okay. You guys can pony up an extra 75 grand. We can pay these fucking guys off and get everybody back, and we can go about our lives here, you know?
I got 65% of this, so clearly I'm the hero here.
I got most of it. You guys, I'm just asking for a little tiny piece of it from you. He also said Ernest Brendel had resisted during the kidnapping and received a broken jaw in the struggle. He said they had to break his jaw. Then he said, look, there's his blood's in the car and everything. Takes everybody outside. Come on, field trip, guys. We're going out in the driveway. Pops the trunk of the red Toyota, and they said that Mrs. Christine, the sister, said she was shocked at the amount of blood and the overwhelming odor of blood emanating from it.
Oh, my God.
Her husband, who's a physician and pharmacologist, said the quantity of blood here is way too much for a jaw injury. No one, unless his jaw was ripped from his body, this is too much blood completely. They wanted to call the police, but Hightower said, no, your phone's been tapped. The mafia said they tapped all of our phones. That's why I'm here in person. Duh, I would have just fucking called you. Jesus, you people are fucking stupid. Pay attention. So he said, you can't do that. So Hightower left at about 1 a.m. that morning, and they sit around, Christine and Alexander, and they're like, what do we do? And they're like, we got to call somebody. So they just went to a neighbor's house and called the FBI. Duh.
Yeah. It's too much blood. We have to. 102. He leaves at 102. The police phone rings.
That's what I mean. Somebody.
It's too much blood.
It's just too much blood. It's just too much. It's just too much boat. So he said they ended up saying his story didn't quite hang together. Because it's ridiculous. That's why.
Right.
So,
a guy has personal effects of two people missing and blood all over the trunk of their car,
and he's
driving it. The logical conclusion is he fucking killed people.
Yeah. So what you're saying, the mob broke his jaw, stuffed him into his own trunk to drive him somewhere, took him, then returned the car to you? How the fuck, with a bunch of stuff, is that here's a car, here's his driver's license, here's some... Take all this stuff, all right? And I want you to take it to their sister. That's not how the mafia works.
Take this and start breaking the news to the family.
Yeah, no. Goodfellas came out like the year before. I assume they know just from that this is not how this all works. You know, I never don't remember this in Goodfellas at all. This is terrible.
Real down low.
Mm-hmm. This is not good mafiaism here, if that's what they're doing.
All
these
he
guys
heard
deserve
was
to get caught.
The mafia kills people. That's all the information I need.
Who's bad and scary? Mafia. It was either that or a satanic cult. He couldn't decide. And he's like, I'm going with the mafia. They seem more real, you know. Maybe it was the mid-80s, more satanic panic, but... So
it's generally up here in this region of the country. Yeah, I think I got this covered.
I could do this. It's witchy, you know, in the fall. You could see, like, people doing witch shit in a field. I don't know. So
just make some wild shit story up, and everybody will go with it.
Jesus, the mafia. So the FBI has an investigation. They're told that at that point they find out that Ernest Brendel had filed a complaint against Hightower with the National Futures Association and Commodities Futures Trading Commission, and he had sought revocation of Hightower's license. He claimed that he claimed he mismanaged his account and all that sort of thing. So now they also found out that on September 19th, 1991, Hightower, this is before, you know, 2 days before everything, he went to a store and purchased a, quote, Bear Devastator crossbow.
Whoa.
A crossbow called the Bear Devastator, like a bear, not bear, like no clothes, like a
what
fucking
thing
giant
shoot?
Animal.
Ball peen hammers?
Just pointy hammers. He got that to get, well, he got it to, oh my God, we were not far off. He got it together with six arrows and six special bullet tip points.
Oh, my God, exploding fucking arrows?
What is he, Rambo? This is ridiculous. What kind of stupid shit is this? This is an 80s movie. He saw too many 80s movies. He missed Goodfellas. Yeah. Less Rambo, more Goodfellas, Chief. Maybe you wouldn't be in the situation you're in.
Is it like a bullet on the tip of it, or is it like a powder-charged bullet on the tip of it?
Bullet point tips.
It's got to be something that's got fucking powder charge, right?
I guess. Either a powder charge or it has to be, right?
It has
Otherwise,
to be.
It's because that's what the shape of an arrow is anyway. Well, Maybe it's a pointy, narrow thing rather than a big, like, arrowhead shape. Right, maybe it's like a jart, basically.
Yeah,
like a jart
like
that you're firing at fucking
like a lawn dart.
5,000. Yeah, that you're firing at 5,000 feet per second. You know, a little different. So, now, Alice Brendel was last seen on September 20th, which was a Friday, when she rode the bus home from Providence, where she was worked at the library. Her husband didn't meet her, which was the usual custom, so she just walked toward home alone. That was usually her husband met her at the bus stop, and they walked home together, and they went and picked up the kid, and it was like a nice little family thing. So Emily was ordinarily picked up by her father after the school's out program at the YMCA, but obviously it was Hightower that picked her up that day. Now, the father-in-law, Christopher's father-in-law, Mr. Slicker, he said that he was around the night Susan told him that she wanted a divorce, and he said that you could tell he was agitated. He clomps his teeth. That's a habit he has. The more aggravated and anxious he gets, the harder he clomps them.
Jesus.
So I guess grinds them sort of thing. It was said that Hightower drank the last of three scotches. He downed the third one, he threw the tumbler against the living room fireplace and just walked away with fucking glass shards. It exploded, obviously, in glass shards, and he just walked away. So
a celebration.
That's a lot. And then Hightower's father-in-law said that Hightower stayed out all night on September 19th. Mm-hmm. And when he returned home the next day at 11 a.m., he was wet and covered with mud. His eyeglasses were bent and his leg was scraped. And they said he immediately showered, put his dirty clothes in the washing machine, and asked Slicker to add some bleach to the wash. And the guy said this was the first time he'd ever seen Hightower do laundry. So this is all very suspicious. He says the night of the 19th, but it has to be the night of the 20th. He stayed out all night on the 19th and then the 20th, because this would be, yeah, that makes sense, actually.
Yep.
Because then he got Alice. So he would have got them before 11 a.m., the adults, and then he would have gotten Alice later on, or Emily, the little girl, later on in the afternoon. Okay, that makes sense. But she would have been alive till the afternoon. Alice got off the bus. She was seen coming home on the bus. So maybe he just...
Two events?
Yeah, either that or this guy's got the night mixed up, the father-in-law. Yeah. That's the only other possibility. So September 23rd, 1991, Hightower called Christine, Ernest's sister, you know, who he went to get ransom money from, at her home. And he also called Christine's husband at his office. He told them not to worry about raising any money because I got this taken care of. I've taken care of everything, and I've arranged for return of both of our families to their rightful places. All good, no harm, no foul. Please, no more contact with the authorities, because that's only going to fucking foul the deal. So chill on that shit.
Call him back and tell him, just kidding, we got this.
That's, I got it, totally. The same day, he forged a check in Alice Brendel's name in the sum of $1,500 payable to himself.
Yeah.
So he also mailed the National Futures Association and Commodities Futures Trading Commission a letter signed by Ernest, quote unquote, and written on stationery bearing his letterhead, Ernest, containing a statement withdrawing the complaint against Christopher Hightower. That is fucking amazing.
He really wants to trade commodities. That's
he really does.
Thing.
He's like, I'll kill everybody to trade for fucking frozen orange juice. I have to do it. So the police, because, you know, they know about missing people and everything, they came over the Brendel family house about 11 a.m. that morning and no one was home. They knocked on the door. Nobody came to the door. The detective checked the garage area and found a portion of it had recently been washed down and swept. And then he observed a wet area around and brooms that were still wet in the garage.
Uh-oh.
So that's been cleaned recently. Like, yeah. It's still wet, for Christ's sake. So the police then issued a broadcast to everybody, to not to the public, but to themselves, mm-hmm. to, if you see Christopher Hightower driving around in an 88 red Toyota, go ahead and grab him and fucking pull him over and find something to hold him on, basically. Mm-hmm. He's got a trunk full of blood. If that's still there, just, you know, suspicion, just grab him.
Yeah. All right.
So the vehicle then is stopped in the parking lot of the St. John's Church on County Road, and Christopher's driving. On his person are found credit cards belonging to Ernest Brendel, and also a white powder covering the entire rear section of the vehicle. Like, the whole back seat is covered in a white powder. And also what appears to be copious amounts of blood, according to the police report, in the car and in the trunk and everything like that. Then the sergeant noticed a large bag of lime on the floor in the rear of the vehicle, which would be where all the powders comes from. He's just got a half a bag of lime in the car. He's the worst mob guy ever. Just ever. He's got it behind him in the back seat like it's groceries. It's not ice cream shit. You got on the way home. It's
I realize that shit is useful in a lot of different applications, but the only time I've ever heard it applied is in a with a body.
Yeah. Well, you've never had a half a bag of it just carried in the back seat of your car behind your seat. That's the thing. That's one of those you buy if you need it for a garden or whatever the fuck it's used for. You buy it at like Home Depot, put it in your trunk, take it home, and then put it in your fucking garage or whatever and
throw
use
the bag away.
And then you throw it away. You know, you're not like, I'll keep that in my car in case I need it for later. So he's got that tons of blood. He's taken to the police station. The vehicle's towed away, obviously. On him, he has $1,500 in cash as well. Yeah, that's interesting, huh? And his wallet contained three credit cards belonging to Ernest, which is obviously there. And also they noticed I just love a half empty large bag of lime on the floor. In addition to that, they also found, once they got it into the police garage and searched it thoroughly, several teeth, four to be exact, a half-empty bag of lime, a Bear Devastator crossbow as well. Blood type was O, which is the same type as Ernest Brendel's blood. One of the teeth is identified as his, and the rest are Alice's.
Oh, no.
The evidence here, they're sent to the FBI lab and everything like that. The police captain said, we had held out hope right to the end to come up with this end result we've come up with, especially when it involves an 8-year-old girl, is tough to deal with. We all have families. They don't know where they are, but they know they're missing teeth and a shitload of blood, and there's lime in the car, so that's not a good sign.
Not good at all.
By the way, the letter to the commission was found to have been printed on the Brendel's computer on September 22nd. This is the day after they disappeared. So he went back to the house, hung out, wrote a letter. You know he ate food there. You know
Absolutely.
He ate a sandwich.
Yeah. Yeah.
So while he's in custody, they found all this shit. He's charged with driving a stolen car and possession of a weapon and extortion right away. So one of the librarians, by the way, who knew Alice said, quote, I think he cracked. His personal and professional life was coming apart and something inside him just snapped. That's what everyone in town is saying. Holy shit, this guy must have fucking snapped here. So they give him his, you know, his Miranda rights and all that sort of deal. And he tells the police that he had inflated the amount of the ransom. He still says that the mafia kidnapped them. He's sticking with that. He changes it to, it's not the mafia anymore. You'll see. He adjusts that. He says, but he inflated it. They only wanted 200 grand. My only crime here is to try to get 300 grand because he wanted to keep 100 grand for himself to help him with his financial problems. Otherwise, he's doing the Lord's work.
The ransom. I'm just taking care of
I got to get a finder's fee here. He made statements that he hid in his office in his father-in-law's home there. He had a sawed-off shotgun and an automatic handgun as well. They asked him. He also said there's a large amount of blood in the back of the car that he'd washed out of the car as well. He said he did that in the garage. That's why they had to spray out the garage, or he had to clean the garage. He said he's having marital problems. He stayed at the Brendel residence the night of September 19th and 20th. Because, you know, then that's when they were still alive. And he stayed at his office on September 21st for the night. So he, you know, signed a statement saying all of this. He said they go back over it with him and all that sort of shit. He, at about 4 a.m., the sergeant says that he's going to go out and check some tire tracks that have been observed near, you know, around this area, right, for him to possibly have buried the bodies. So Hightower responds by saying, quote, "Sarge, you're wasting your time. They're not buried there. Call me an attorney for the morning. After talking to the attorney, if he says it's all right, I'll talk to you." So in other words, don't waste your fucking time. Yeah. At 4 a.m. I'll tell you where the bodies are tomorrow, is basically what he says. So the next morning, a public defender comes over to see him, and now he's not saying shit about anything. He won't say where they are. Now, at this point, too, there's like yellow ribbons and people are, they've been gone, you know, 3 days and people are, it's, you know, crazy. There's signs up, you know, bring home Emily and all this shit. I mean, it's terrible, man. November 7th, 91, Catherine McCloy, just a woman who lives in the area in Barrington, she's walking her dogs near St. Andrew's Middle School. Yeah, 2 months later.
Oh, my God.
In Barrington. One of the dogs ran into the bushes and wouldn't come back when she was calling him. An obedient dog wouldn't come. So she followed the dog and found the dog sniffing and pawing at an area where there were two depressions in the ground along with a small amount of white powder.
Oh, God.
So this lady had gardening experience, and she knew gardening and knew what lime looked like.
Right.
So she thought it was lime. She saw the depressions, put two and two together. She has seen Goodfellas.
Yeah.
And she called the police.
Yeah,
and
he's been here.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus Christ! They had to rebury him. What is that? A wing? I got a heart. Oh, you can still go for the old heart and lungs. What are we doing? The heart of the leg of the wing, Henry. So they call the police in, and the police unearth the whole thing here, and it's all three of them together. All three of them together. Ernest died as a result of two arrow wounds to the chest.
Jesus.
Arrow wounds to the chest. Died from wounds inflicted by an arrow to the chest. Alice Brendel was strangled, and they couldn't find the exact cause of Emily at that time. It's undetermined. Her skull had problems. It's multiple things is the issue. They said that snapped off arrows and arrowheads were found in Ernest Brendel's chest and buttocks. Alice Brendel was apparently strangled with a cloth that was knotted around her neck. So this motherfucker, this is horrific.
Vicious.
They said, Emily was the one, because Alice had problems with her skull as well. They said in Emily's case, there was no apparent visible signs of injury to her body.
Good.
So
I don't
that was
to know. Yeah.
Yeah, there was no sexual assault, no.
That's good.
So we don't know what happened to Alice basically at that point. So there were apparently with Ernest, there were non-fatal fractures of the skull, lacerations of the scalp, and of course arrow wounds all fucking over him. Wow. Buttocks, legs, chest, back.
Clearly the target.
Yeah, clearly the target. So it's brutal, man. They said the cause of Emily Brendel's death could not be determined to a reasonable degree of medical certainty. So it's still unknown in the thing.
I don't want to know the horrible things he did to that poor
baby. We don't know. We know he didn't do certain things, so at least that's helpful. The FBI laboratory analyst said that samples taken from about two dozen items in and around the Brendel's garage tested positive for the presence of human blood. They found blood in five places on the crossbow that killed Brendel, and she was unable to make a comparison because there was no usable samples of Brendel's blood to take. So they said at that point you still needed a lot for DNA comparison. You needed to have like a half a gallon or some shit. You need to basically drain somebody like a deer to be able to do any testing. So
you needed to be able to swish that around.
Yeah, they also said that the letter withdrawing the complaint against Hightower was printed on their computer, and it was made by cutting and pasting letters that Brendel had previously typed, like a fucking psychopath ransom letter.
Unbelievable.
Unreal. So immediately they say they want to stop the rumors. The there's a Rhode Island State Police official that holds a press conference and says that, quote, they were not dismembered. Because there's all these rumors that Emily was mutilated and all this shit. So they said they were not dismembered, the bodies were not mutilated, nor did the bodies appear to have been dipped in acid or had acid poured over their bodies. These were all rumors that were
floating around town. This is what happens when you involve the fucking mob. God damn it.
Yeah, goddamn mafia. He said, I only say this to dispel some of the rumors and wild stories that are going around Barrington. There were a lot of concerns from school children in Barrington over the acid theory. Hopefully this will help some of the school children and parents over there in any kind of small way. So, yeah, I would say so. So this is obviously fucking horrific. One of the people here says, I said 3 weeks ago they're all dead and they're out of their misery. No matter what happened, no matter how utterly horrible it was for them, it's over. This is Emily's, one of the uncles here. He said, I had to do that for my own sake. I had to assume they're dead. I had to. Yeah, you don't want to go through it again. So, yikes, man. This is... Wow. And they another friend of Hightower said, quote, people just don't understand this one. How could this have happened? This is the executive director of the East Bay Mental Health Center. He said, Mr. Hightower seemed like one of the pillars of the community. How could someone have presented that image and then acted this complete opposite way? Who do you trust is what people want to know. Well, not him. So when the bodies are found, he's put under suicide watch because he starts acting awfully fucking crazy. Obviously, Jesus Christ, it's getting really bad. I think he's also attacked in jail at one point. Somebody goes after him at one point here. Yeah. He's indicted on an 11-count indictment. His case, this is what he presents in court, is that he witnessed the murders. They tied him to a chair and made him watch the murders of this whole family, okay?
Okay.
In his words, it is organized crime, but not the mafia. It was, quote, four men... unknown to him, quote, two of whom were Latinos and two of whom were Orientals.
Okay.
So it's an Asian Latino gang that's gotten together to kill families and make completely unrelated people who happen to handle some minor financial matters for one of the people watch for some reason. Because his family's fine. They're not murdered. So that, you know, they weren't kidnapped, his family. So. this is fucking ridiculous, obviously. And he also presented a case of insanity. Basically, he also said he was forced to dig the graves. They made him do it. That's why he was there. That was his point.
Kyoto Hefe is very dangerous people.
It's obvious. Yeah, that's how it works. Kim Jong Sanchez is a really hard guy to please. You don't want to fuck
now
with
him. I'm insane because I had nothing to do with this and they're making me do awful things.
And it was like basically like, listen, I didn't do it, but if I did, it's because I'm crazy. That's his defense. So, yeah, he also wanted to have a separate trial on each of the three murder counts and a separate trial than that on the kidnapping count to Emily as well.
That's not how this works.
And they said, no, it's all one thing. You buried them in the same hole. It's all one thing, asshole.
One of
that. So, yeah, the trial comes along here. And two-pronged attack, like I said, innocence because he's crazy, both of those, even though those are completely against each other. He said he has multiple personality disorder now, which that's never come up before. He testifies over 6 days. Imagine cross-examining this idiot. It'd be a fucking ball to cross-examine this guy. Smart as he is, he's an idiot, you know what I mean? Yeah. He said the mobsters forced him to bury the family and warned him they would kill his wife and two sons if he didn't cooperate. He said that members of an Asian organized crime group killed the family over because Ernest stole millions of dollars that they were trying to launder through him from the heroin trade.
And I know all this, but I didn't say a word to anybody.
No.
Yakuza Grande.
Yakuza Grande doesn't know. So the jury, when they're done laughing at him, they say guilty of Jesus Christ. Here are the counts here. Torture and aggravated battery for murder of Ernest Brendel, murder of Alice Brendel, kidnapping of Emily Brendel, child under 16, murder of Emily Brendel, breaking into and entry of the Brendel garage, entry of the Brendel dwelling with intent to commit larceny, forging and counterfeiting a negotiable instrument with the intent to defraud, and unlawful burial in violation of three different counts. That's 11 counts altogether. In sentencing, Christopher says, I've suffered as well. You know, that's not what you say to the judge when they're sentencing you. You say, I've done horrible things and feel bad. You don't go, I've suffered just as much. He said, in addition to that suffering, this is a quote, I've also experienced the nightmares of the Brendels' deaths. Their deaths are certainly a tragedy, but it's not the biggest tragedy here. The fact that there is a large drug ring still operating today, that's the biggest tragedy.
Your Honor, I can't sleep.
Holy shit. There's people dealing drugs, Your Honor. Fucking 8-year-old. The judge said that it was, quote, a very simple task to give him the maximum sentences. He said, I have never in my extensive legal career seen such evil in a crime as this. You, sir, may fuck off. It is, let's see here. Count one, life imprisonment without the possibility of parole. Count two, life to be served consecutively with count one, not concurrent.
Shit.
Count three, to be served is life imprisonment, to be served consecutively to one and two.
Oh, it's over for you.
Count four, life imprisonment without parole, to be served consecutively to the sentences of one, two, and concurrently with three. So still three. Uh-huh. Three life withouts he's got so far in a row. And then 10 years imprisonment for 5, 6, 7, and 8. So that's another 40 years. And then 5 years apiece on the three counts of burial and also a fine of $10,000 each on that. And then all of that to be served consecutively, by the way, on everything else. It's three life sentences plus 100 years plus, you know, they're going to kick his corpse and, like, you know, fucking piss on it when he's done. 1993, the family sues the YMCA for letting fucking Emily go with him.
Good.
Thankfully there. And then he's been a total dick in prison. He got beaten up in prison. He's been had to be transferred all around. One guy here said, this is a guy who interviewed him, one of the mental health people after he retired. He said, quote, he would give you the creeps. No humanity at all. You look into their eyes and you don't see a soul. There's just nothing there. It's just hardcore evil personified.
Wow.
Yeah, he also sued them in 2012 and 13. He's been suing the prison system. Yeah. He's in Illinois now, and he's been suing.
Piece of shit.
Been suing like crazy over all sorts of different shit. He was on World's Most Evil Killers. I didn't even know that. And also The Con Man Murderer. Oh, that was the episode of World's Most Evil Killers. That, everybody, is Barrington, Rhode Island. That's crazy.
One of the worst people to ever exist,
what a
man.
Huge people. Well, he has no, like, he's just like, I didn't do it. The worst part of it is there's a drug ring out. He's like, you know, OJ looking for the real killers. He's a fucking asshole.
Right. The best part about it is that he's completely incompetent and can't do this a lot. Otherwise, this would be a fucking dangerous man.
Oh, he could do this at will. An 8-year-old girl? I mean, Jesus, if you could do that, you could do anything. If you like that, tell the world, give us 5 stars, whatever app you're listening on. Those reviews help drive us up the charts. They really do help the show, so thank you for those. Follow us on social media. We're at Murder Small on Twitter, at Small Town Pod on Facebook, at Small Town Murder on Instagram. ShutUpAndGiveMeMurder.com is the website. Yes. Get all your merchandise. Get your tickets for live shows. Yeah. Damn it, we're in Milwaukee at the Pabst. That's the one that we're doing. Can't wait for that. September the 10th. Get your tickets. We're going to sell that bad boy out and may have our biggest show ever. And also Florida, Tampa, and Orlando in September. ShutUpAndGiveMeMurder.com. Also Patreon.com/CrimeAndSports. Mm-hmm. Anybody $5 or above, all the bonus stuff this week. The scandals of Michael Jordan, affairs, fucking gambling, conspiracy theories, paternity suits, giant divorces, small town murder bonus is going to be all sorts of reviews, people's weird reviews. You want to find out about a goddamn IKEA in the middle of Kansas? We'll talk about it, probably. Who knows? Come through. Check it out. Patreon.com/CrimeAndSports. Keep coming back for more. Thank you so much, everybody. And until next week, it's been our pleasure.
Bye.
Hey Prime members, you can listen to Small Town Murder early and ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen early and ad-free with Wondery Plus and Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.